This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Itai Flesch's book, The Holy and the Broken, A Cry for Israeli-Palestinian Peace from a Land That Must Be Shared, was written in 2024 during the still ongoing war between Israel and Hamas. Itai is a Jewish Australian journalist and peace educator. He is my guest now to talk about his book, and he's also going to be a guest at Limud. Itai, welcome and thanks so much for joining me.
Toda rabba. It's lovely to be with you here on Chai FM.
Itai, you wrote the book in 2024 after the October the 7th attack, and as you note in the book, that attack absolutely changed everything. I think the three themes in your book are peace building, compassion, and hope. How do you see that now, 1 year later, with the ongoing war?
Yeah, look, I started writing the book on October 10th, and initially it was just a diary. It was just a diary of what it's like to work in a peace organization, facilitating dialogue between Israelis and Palestinians during a war. And I never imagined that it would be published, let alone by HarperCollins. But I think the story, the way it develops, is really the story of my life over the past 2 years living in Jerusalem, trying to have conversations that seem almost impossible anywhere else in the world. And I think for people that don't live in Jerusalem or don't work in peace building, a lot of people will look at this place and say there's no hope and that Israelis and Palestinians are doomed to never live together and that we should all just cry. And the book tries to give an alternative vision for why I think we can share this land in peace one day and how we actually do that in a grassroots peace-building organization, which is what actually gives me the hope that this is possible.
It must have been absolutely heartbreaking for you to write this book at the time you did. I think, as you said, October the 7th changed so much. But for peace-loving people, it must have been particularly hard.
Yeah, for sure. Like I can say, I mean, I write this in my book, the immediate days following October 7th, I also questioned myself, should I work in peace building as something I've devoted my whole life to, because, you know, it's all seemed to blow up in my face. But then I guess for the last 660 days, I've been living the alternative. I've seen, you know, enormous death, destruction, devastation in Israel, but especially in Gaza. And I don't want that for my people. I don't want my people to be soldiers and fighting forever. And I don't want rockets on this country. And I don't want Palestinians to be displaced from their homes and face hunger and, you know, all of those things. And which is why I came back to peace, because I can't see any other way that we coexist other than that. Because if we coexist through this violence that we have now, it will destroy us both physically and also morally and emotionally, and I just don't want to see that happen anymore.
Itai, the longer the war goes on, the less talk there is and has been of a two-state solution. Where does it leave the peace camp?
Well, before I think we talk about the two-state solution or any kind of political resolution, which I know is talked a lot about in the UN, you need to have people that actually want to share the land. I mean, at the moment, there isn't a desire. Most Israelis don't want a two-state solution. A lot of Palestinians do, but, you know, the two-state solution they want is not one that Israelis want. So I think, and that's why I'm not a politician. I don't sort of outline I do outline for 2 pages a political plan I support, but mainly a lot of what the book about is, in order for any political solution that is peaceful to be realized, you need people to support it. You need a grassroots movement that will say, I will vote for that, I will march for that, I will, you know, support that politically. And at the moment, that doesn't exist among Israelis or Palestinians. And that's what grassroots peace building organizations are trying to do. They're trying to make a constituency for peace so that when we have leaders that are willing to make brave compromises, there'll be people to follow them.
So let's look a little bit at what was happening at grassroots before October the 7th. I'm sure you visited the kibbutzim on the Gaza border, and a lot of the people there were involved in outreach. And I think there's famous stories of the man who was killed, who had been taking Gazans to hospitals, et cetera, et cetera. What is the voice like among peace? It must be so hard. I mean, to talk peace in the midst of a war that's gone on for nearly 2 years. Where's that voice of peace coming from?
So, yeah, I think you're referring to Oded Lifshitz there, and that is very true, you know, that he was kidnapped, and we all know what happened to his family as well. I also know that the son of Vivian Silva. Vivian Silva was a Canadian peace activist involved in women wage peace. She was killed on October, initially thought to be kidnapped, but was actually killed on October 7th. I know her son, Yonatan Zagan, he says not only does he believe in peace, he's actually donated a soup kitchen with Vivian's name in Gaza, in her memory, because he said, look, my mother's whole life was to be a voice of peace, and what better way to honor my mother than to build a soup kitchen to feed people in Gaza. So yes, there are some people that obviously no longer believe in peace after October 7th, and the same is true on the Palestinian side, but I think there are others who believe in peace even more, and I'm in that camp. I think you know, this is not going to be solved through the barrel of a gun. Like, that's so clear to me that there's so much misery that I can see all around me among my Israeli and Palestinian friends today, and so much hatred around the world. Like, we have to try something else. I think there's a deal on the table that can bring food into Gaza, can bring the hostages home. I think Israel and the Palestinians should take that deal.
Yeah, so you mentioned Vivian Silva, and there's a connection with her to South Africa, and that my colleagues at the board used to work with her in terms of projects and as with Women Wage Peace. And I was actually in her home that had been literally burned.
So it was very,
so powerful. Itai, so let's look about, you say you're not a politician and you don't believe peace will come through the barrel of a gun. What has the response to your book been?
I don't know the response of everyone who reads it. I just know the response of people who write to me. And I can say from those who, it sold, you know, about 3,000 copies so far, those who have read it and that do write to my inbox through my website, itai.au, by the way, if you want to reach me, is that they feel very comforted by the book. They sometimes feel very challenged by it, but they often say that it's a book that they haven't read before, because if you go on Amazon today and you search books about Israel or Palestine, they're either very sort of pro-Israel advocacy kind of books, like books by Noah Tishbe and people like that, or they're pro-Palestine books by Rashid Khalidi and authors like that. And I've read those kinds of books, but there's very few books written that center Israeli-Palestinian peace builders, people like Vivian Silva, people like Women Wage Peace and the Parent Circle and Combatants for Peace and Seeds of Peace, where I work. And I think people are saying, that's a voice I never hear. We never in the media anywhere. We're not on social media. People aren't sharing our stories. People aren't, you know, you can see images from our organizations of people cooperating and laughing and crying and caring for one another. And that's not the story of this place around the world, especially not in South Africa. And so the people that are reading the book, I think, have a lot of hope, and they're empowered that there's a vision there for what this land can be, which is very different from what it is right now.
Itai, tell me a little bit about the work that you are still managing to do in terms of grassroots, bringing people together. We had Women Wage Peace out as our guest actually for a Women's Month a couple of years back. And I haven't heard, like, where are peace organizations like that, and what work is currently being done, and how difficult is it to find peace partners that can talk together from both sides?
Yeah. So Seeds of Peace is part of a network called the Alliance for Middle East Peace, which has 160 member organizations, including the Hand in Hand School and a joint Jewish Arab football team and sports clubs and a basketball team and women's groups, church groups, synagogue groups, religious, secular groups, ex-soldiers, you know, probably every demographic within this country probably has a peace organization. Some are very small, some are very large. Some spend a lot of their time protesting, some write. There was recently a book that came out, Women Building Hope, with stories of these organizations. So they exist. We have regular conferences. We were all in Paris 2 weeks ago on a conference promoting the two-state solution. So, yeah, this movement exists. I'm proud to be a part of it. Obviously, I want it to grow. I know I was listening to your previous guest, Gabriella Faber, talking about International Women's Day. And I will say that a lot of these organizations actually are led by women.
Yeah.
It's interesting that all of the negotiations between Israel and Hamas until today have only been conducted by men. And I actually have a whole chapter in my book about the importance of having women facilitate dialogue. Because there's various studies from around the world that found that in conflicts where women were leading the dialogue and also leading the implementation of various peace agreements, there was a 30% higher chance of those conflicts coming to resolution than when women weren't involved in peace negotiations. So I think involving women, involving people of faith, involving children, involving all the people that are generally not involved in negotiations is a very important step forward.
Yeah, and you talk about not involved, and these are in many ways the most vulnerable in a war. So they're kind of the most important stakeholders in a war, but they don't have any voice in terms of how this war can end.
Mm. Yeah, I think a lot of the people who are most affected by the war never get a say in it, which is heartbreaking.
Itai, you are going to be talking at Limud. You are working extremely hard at Limud, actually. One of the topics, obviously, is going to be your book, The Holy and the Broken, okay? But you're also giving four other sessions, and they all sound really, really exciting. I know one I'm going to go to by choice, one I'm going to be moderating, but let's go through them slowly. Unbelievably True Stories from Jerusalem is one of the sessions you're doing. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so there's an event that I go to once a month in Jerusalem called Israel Story. They also have a podcast. And they have this live storytelling night where people get on stage and tell stories, just a seven-minute story about something that happened to them in Jerusalem. So I entered that contest and won it a few months ago. And so I wanted to share a couple of the stories that I've told at that event.
So you won. So it's competitive storytelling.
It's like they invite people on stage to tell seven stories about Jerusalem. And at the end, the crowd votes for the story they like the most. So, yeah. So in that session, I'm going to share the story that I told that won that competition, but also I told that in Hebrew here in Jerusalem, but I'll tell it in English in Johannesburg.
Give us a teaser.
There's no way to tell you the story without telling you the
story,
but I'll
okay.
just say that I'm going to tell three stories, and all of them are about challenging stereotypes. I'll just put it there. They're stories that you think will sort of end a certain way and then don't.
Oh, that sounds
that doesn't give away too
really
much.
Good.
Yeah.
And then the second topic is Nothing Off Limits, Israeli Satire and Comedy Room. That's the one I'm attending. Definitely.
Yeah, so that's there's a lot of satire shows in Israel. I don't know if you watch them, Hayyudim Baim, Eretz Nederet, and they laugh at things that you would think that Israelis would not be laughing at right now, from religious issues to political issues to even to, you know, matters relating to the war. And so I prepared a talk with various video clips from those satirical shows to show how Israelis are using satire that's sometimes very funny, sometimes exceptionally dark, to deal with this. Some people might get offended by it, so I apologize in advance, but that's the nature of satire. It's confronting, but I wanted to bring that voice of Israeli satire into Limud and see what people think of it. Yeah.
The third one is Israeli Sing-Along, the Saturday Night Tish. What can we anticipate from that?
Yeah, so I'm also a guitarist and a musician. And when I was last in Linwood 10 years ago, I did a Kabla Chabat with Yair Dalal on the wood. And I wanted to do something musical again at Linwood. And that will be a session where I've prepared a songbook of several Israeli songs that have some recent and some old. And in addition to singing them, we're going to tell the story of each song. So it will be kind of like both an intellectual and emotional experience. Well, it's late on a Saturday night and people can have a l'chaim with it, and we'll have some candles, and it will be hopefully a really special event to kind of, you know, because I know in Linwood you have, you know, you go to 7-8 lectures a day, you've got a lot of information in your head. So I thought at the end of the day, it's kind of good to decompress with music. So that's what that session will be.
And it's not that late. It's 7 p.m. It's just before supper. It's the nice part of the day after. So yeah. I think that should be really, really fun. And then the session.
That session is 10:45
The Saturn one is 7 yeah. p.m. You are working yeah. extremely, extremely hard. And then,
well, you know, what you do when you go to South Africa.
Well, obviously, this isn't your first Linwood either. Obviously,
I've been to about 20 Linwoods around the world, but this is my second South African one. And it's the Linwood that I've enjoyed the most of all the ones that I've done. It's just, it's a very warm community there. Also, growing up in Australia, I have to say that South Africans remind me a lot of Australians, because a lot of Australians are South Africans, yeah. but B, it's a foreign country that feels very familiar to me.
Yeah, and we do have an amazingly warm community. And then the last one, which is political again, it's a panel which includes Akiva Spiegelman, Nir Hassan, Lahav Harkov, and the topic is what the hell is happening in Israeli politics. And I'm excited to be moderating it, but I did say I'm not going to prepare for it till the day before, because what the hell is happening in Israeli politics is changing so incredibly quickly, and the Middle East region is changing so incredibly quickly that it's very hard to predict at any given time. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah. I will also share thoughts the day before based on what is happening on that day, but Israeli politics is not something that gives me a lot of joy at the moment. But I am happy to share how it breaks my heart and why. So,
yeah,
I don't have many optimistic things to say about what's coming from my government right now.
And that kind of is the strength of Linwood as well, is that it brings together such diverse voices. I mean, looking at that panel, it will provide the full range of opinions out there on the war amongst the Jewish community. Well, maybe not the full range, but certainly some of the dominant thinking on what is and the direction should be. And it allows everybody an opportunity to kind of talk it out and ask questions. And that's kind of part of the Linwood learning journey.
Yeah, I believe actually all four of us on that panel are Israeli. And I think it will be good for people to see the spectrum of Israeli opinion, not the full spectrum because we're only four people, but at least enough of a diversity to see the kind of debates that we have here.
I look forward to seeing you in person then next week, is it? As soon as that?
Yeah, next week. I'm flying soon, so looking forward to being there, and thanks for welcoming me to your community.
And Itai, just before you go, if anybody would like to get hold of your book or you?
Yeah, so my website is itai.au, itai.au. I have a book launch in Johannesburg on August 14th at Book Dealers. So the details are on my website on how to register for that, and then also the details of all the Linwood events, where to buy the book in South Africa and also in other places in the world is all on the website. So to being in touch.
Thank you very much. That's Itai Flesher, and we've been talking about his book, The Holy and the Broken, A Cry for Israeli-Palestinian Peace from a Land That Must Be Shared. And he will also be at Linwood.